by Simon, and I think he has changed the title a tiny little bit compared to the originally announced version, but it's still going to be on three tensor networks. So please take the screen.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me start. So good afternoon, everybody, or morning or evening, depending your where you are located. And let me start thanking the organizer for the kind invitation. For giving this talk today, I will present some recent results we have obtained by means of unconstrained tree tensor network simulations. So I will start with some technicalities on the method. So I will briefly sketch the strategy that we are using, and then I will move on in showing up the results that we have obtained. So a very briefly introduction. That's not really, you know, I'm sure everybody here knows that, but what we are trying to solve here is to approximate a many body wave function of this form, which is of course exponentially large with a number of sites in your systems with by exploiting an efficient tensor network ansatz. The first and probably most celebrated and exploited being the matrix product states or the MRG-like algorithm and scenario for one dimensions null systems, which can, of course, as we have also seen, generalized in two dimensions pretty straightforward with PEPS ansatz, as we also have seen this week. What I will concentrate on instead today is yet another tensor network ansatz, and namely a tree tensor network and a binary tree tensor networks. The simplest possible option you might choose as a hierarchical tensor network structure. Of course, we all know, as we have also heard in the previous talk, that beyond that, there is MERA. And again, if you want, this is the simplest particular instance of a MERA structure. So my point of view on all this approach is essentially that tensor network states are a compressed description of a system. So we are trying to compress information as much as possible. And they not only can do that, but they are tunable between an extremely efficient description, an infield description when your bond dimension is equal to one, to the exact inefficient description where your bond dimension, I'm thinking about matrix product states or applied to 2D or 3 tensor network, has an exponential size. So what is our approach? I already said that our ansatz is this one. And then, you know, when you start playing with 3 tensor network, the first thing that you can do is to install a gauge on it. So we refer to this strategy as unconstrained tree tensor network, because differently from RG approach, this is an example of real space renormalization group approach. If you do some part of strategies, so you can install a gauge in such a way that these isometries, if you contract it like this, they give you the identity, but not only the isometry with respect to the highest link or tensors that you can put here if you want, but we can move this the gauge around the network and install it on each other, on each tensor, in such a way that, for example, if you want to compute the expectation value of an observable here, exploiting what is also called a causal cone structure, but it's a kind of a strange causal cone because it goes in one direction, then it flows downwards. All these contraction in white are trivial, and so all the contraction of the whole tree, it's simply given by this object here, okay? So once you have this set up, you can of course compute the energy expectation value to be minimized. And what we are going to do is to minimize with respect to one tensor first, like that. So you can compute the effective Hamiltonian with respect to this tensor by means of standard contractions, and then minimize and solving this minimization problem. Finally, we iterate through the three tensor network in some order of preference. So let me spend two words on this passage here, which is kind of one of the fundamental points to go to higher dimensions. So what we are going to do along all the talk is, whenever you want to apply your Hamiltonian operator to your three tensor network, the Hamiltonian operator is typically written in terms of different operators, which can have different forms, and we are going to regroup them as much as possible, but with keeping in such a way that the dimension of the links which are connecting the two bipartitions of these three defined by the tensors that we are optimizing only with one or the maximum two links and not scaling with the system size. Okay, so this structure has no loop, and this is fundamental. So each tensor define it by partition, and all this can be the Hamiltonian can be decomposed in a number of terms in such a way all terms have only one or two links connecting the left and the right by partition. Once you have done that, of course, then you might want to have as less number of Hamiltonian terms as possible. And for each of them, you are going to compute the effective Hamiltonian like this for this red part, the rightmost part. You can do the same for the left part. And then eventually you will have for each term of Hamiltonian, one effective Hamiltonian that you will sum up. And then this defines the global effective Hamiltonian that gives you the eigenvalue problem that you have to solve to find the new update tensor. The nice property of this approach and of installing the gauge is, of course, that then when you move to the next tensor to be optimized, all this part of effective Hamiltonian doesn't have to be computed because it's exactly the same as before. So you have only a few terms to compute moving from one tensor to the other. And this is fundamental because, as you will see soon, there will be a lot of this term that arise in our optimization. Okay, so all these algorithms that I have just described very briefly, you can find all details here, and which is mostly a collection of standard tensor network tools, scales as m to the 4, which for one dimension is bad in the sense that we all know that the MRG scales as m to the 3, but this scaling will remain constant even when we go to 2D and 3D. And this is what will allow us to go to 2 and 3 dimensions. So just for those of you that might wonder, okay, but this is a real space renormalization group. What is the difference? Well, the difference is essentially in the final energy that you can find as a function of a bond dimension. Here you see an example of a critical easing model in 1+1 dimension for different system sizes. And you see that the final energy is for the renormalization group is much, much higher in all cases than for this algorithm. So somehow being more constrained, renormalization group is not able to exploit all the degrees of freedoms that are contained in their tensors to optimize, maximally optimize the tensor network description of the graph. Great. So this is the beginning of the story, of course, and then we started to benchmark this approach. And one of the first benchmark where we really tried to do something interesting has been with studying a Bose-Abel ring. So here we have a ring of bosons pierced by a magnetic field, and you can study all this. And here you see the real scaling of this algorithm as a function of different tensor optimizations. So here you see as a function of a bond dimension, the time needed to optimize the system for 128 sites. Without symmetries, which we all know it's not very efficient, then we install symmetries and we can do double tensor. So standard, if you want the original DMRG algorithm, which is this one, then you can do smarter and more efficient approaches, in particular single tensor update with subspace expansion of the symmetry sectors as introduced here in this papers. Okay, so you see that we have this is typically what we do, so that we are exploiting symmetries and we are optimizing also the symmetry sectors. Indeed, keeping fixed the symmetry sectors would be even faster, but this does not guarantee to find the correct result. So you see very quickly, I have been presenting to you a kind of sequence of technical elements and algorithms that we are employing while performing our simulations. So after that, we have been moved to real two-dimensional systems. So first application of this approach has been now still Hopping bosons, but now in two dimensions here, again with a magnetic field that is piercing the sheet here. And the question is, so this is the interacting version of the Hofstadter model. And so you might wonder if topological features remains given also the presence of a lattice and so on, and of interaction. So what we have been doing is we have generalized the three tensor structure in two dimension. And here you see how we do that. And we do that simply by normalizing along one direction, then after the other. This is due to the fact that in such a way we can keep the rank of the domain of the order of the tensors to the minimal possible ones, which defines the scaling. So we keep the scaling also in two dimension of m to the 4, and so that what changes between 1D and 2D is the number of Hamiltonian terms that we have to contract with three tensor while computing the expectation value of the energy. Okay, so the question here is given some flux and some conditions, so do we find a Laughlin wave function even in this case? And in particular, do we find in the ground state edge currents, so topological edge currents? And please keep in mind this color code here. So green means we compute quantities along this direction, yellow, cyan, and then this magenta, it's in the middle, and so for this pass through the bulk. So we perform minimization, we compute different quantities. First of all, correlations along all these lines in presence of, so with periodic boundary conditions, so no boundaries, or with open boundary condition. And you see that actually without boundary condition, we have exponential decay correlation functions, while with open boundary conditions, we have at the edge something more sophisticated, a kind of a power law decaying wave function. And even more interesting, you can compute the current along the x direction, and you see that without boundaries, of course, this is always zero, and with boundaries, we have exactly currents compatible to exactly this edge current. We have also extended this kind of analysis to other quantities, in particular the topological entanglement entropy, which confirmed the fact that this state is indeed compatible with a new one-half fractional quantum Hall's Laughlin state. And we also have computed the many-body Chern number, so it's possible to do that. I'm not entering the details here. So, this was a very first a nice application of this approach, and then we move to another complex problem, which has also been touched in the previous talk, and so I don't really have to justify it, but essentially the representation of mixed many-body quantum states. So we all know what is a mixed quantum state, a density matrix like that, and we also know that there are very powerful methods, even with tensor network, to study such systems, and in particular, Frank and Ignacio have introduced the MPDO ansatz, this ansatz here, which it's a very efficient ansatz, it's loopless, so it's really it's really easy to work with. But unfortunately, there it has been shown that if you evolve this state by means of a complete Liouville master equation, the result might not be a positive definite matrix. And it's even worse than that, because checking by means of only local operations, so without, of course, diagonalizing exactly density matrix, which is something that we cannot do for large system sizes, it's NP-hard. So this is kind of a problem that we have tried. Gemma de las Cuevas and Coors have also proposed another structure, which they called the locally purified tensor network, which is positive by definition, as you can see here, and we have to work with this and introduce an algorithm to evolve that, which works, but you see this problem is this tensor network ansatz as a loop, and everybody that has worked with looped tensor network know that this is requires a lot of attention and careful tricks. So is there an alternative possibility? Well, there are, of course, you can do quantum jumps, you can purify globally the states, but another possibility is now to use our tree tensor network to represent such state. So we just take each of these wave function and represent it as a tree tensor network. So we have a ket, we have a bra, and then of course the sum is given by an internal index like this. And we can call this something which is a tree tensor operator, of course, because it's an operator or a density matrix. And this is has the nice feature of being loopless and positive. So you can think of using these ansatz to do everything has been done before. And we have used this to attack the problem of actually quantifying the entanglement of mixed many-body quantum systems. Well, why? And well, you probably all know that this is a complex problem, right? For pure state, global pure state, this has an exact solution. So we all know that we have, if we have a pure state and a bipartition, the entanglement between the two bipartition is given by the von Neumann entropy of a reduced density matrix of one of the two. And also that in most cases, or in many cases where you have short range interactions, the von Neumann entropy has to fulfill an area law. That means entropy has to scale as the boundaries or as the number of interaction links that crosses the boundary. And so you can write a scaling expression like this. This is true in all dimensions. And we also know that for one dimensional critical system, actually there is a violation. So logarithmic corrections of the area law that has to appear. So this is kind of a nice, clear scenario. But now if you ask yourself what happens when the global state is mixed, and well, you might have to study convex functions like the entanglement of formation, which are very, very, very complex because they depends on a minimization over all the possible decomposition of a state. So how does the entanglement formation scales with size and temperature? This was the question. Well, we have then used our three tensor operator, and you see that now this has a very nice property, because if you consider a bipartition that cut this, all these operators, even if it's not big like that, are local operators with respect to the bipartition. That means that the minimization has only to be performed on this single tensor here. So this is what you have to do. You have to minimize the entanglement of formation with respect to a unitary acting on this link here. So we have tested and performed this minimization with the critical easing model in one dimension and with the XXZ model. And so we have initialized our state as a thermal equilibrium state of such Hamiltonians. And here you can see the time needed to perform some of these solutions. So this is kind of the time that you would need without the three tensor network ansatz. And here, this is the time that you need to perform it with the TTO. So now we are cheating. So actually this is, we have created this by exactly, you know, diagonalizing this with Lanczos. So we have an exponential scaling that set up at some point, but still we you know, this is something that can go on pretty fast. And why is almost independent is because the bond dimension that we need to come here to compress the critical state at final temperature, it's really, really slowly increasing. Okay. So now you can wonder how is the entanglement of formation at final temperature of these states behaving at final temperature, and this is what we have found. So this entanglement formation is a function of temperature for different system sizes. And then the nice finding is that you can rescale all these functions pretty nicely. They collapses, and so what we can write, it's a conformal scaling for the entanglement formation for the for mixed many body quantum states. And this is confirmed also for the XXZ model. And also you see this gray area is the temperature, which is one fifth of a gap. And you see that it seems that the entanglement is essentially pretty stable until something roughly of the order of 0.2 the gap, which is of course something that we would have guessed that the gap would play a fundamental role here, that we now can quantify such robustness. Finally, here we have a nice comparison between the entanglement of formation and the von Neumann entropy of the link that the Krauss link, so the link that connects the pride and the cat. And you see that this graph gives you two information. One is how stable it is with the number of Boltzmann factors that are included in our state description. And this tells us that essentially the entanglement formation depends only on the first terms. While the von Neumann entropy does not, and actually as it is known, there is also a theoretical curve for that, increases with temperature. What it's interesting for me is that the numerical complexity of simulating all that, all this, still depends on the entropy, so of information, and not of the entanglement that is embedded in the state. We have also benchmarked all this approach against a lot of our situation, random state, GH8 state, the Werner state, and so on, and you can find all the details here. Of course, all this has to be considered, you know, this is a numerical minimization, so they might be only upper bounds of a real entanglement formation, but in any case, we can could compare, we have seen that the bound are tight. Okay, so now let me go on and let's keep on this discussion on area laws and tensor networks. So I already said how the entropy scales, according to area law, and exactly this scaling argument tells you that to go to 2D, actually PEPs are the right thing to the right answers to use, right? Because if you cut the PEPs, bipartite PEPs, tensor network, the number of links that you cut is scales as L, which is exactly what you need to be able to describe this such a high amount of entanglement. Natural. This is not true for MPS or tree tensor network, the one-dimensional version, if you want to use them to describe a two-dimensional system with a snake geometry, for example. And it's also not true, of course, for our tree tensor network, because if I cut the tensor, the tree tensor network here, I am cutting only one link. And so this is not at all obeying the area. That means that if we want to keep the same precision while scaling the system size, actually the bond dimension of the tree tensor network has to scale with exponentially with the size of the system, which is bad. So here you can see a kind of a summary of a state of the art, as far as I know, now on all the, you know, very well-known tensor network structures. So you have a complexity that increases, but of course the more complex one obeys, satisfy area law by construction. And PEPs have also, you know, the problem that it cannot be contractable exactly. There are way out of that, but still you have to work on that. So what I'm going to do now is to present yet another tensor structure, which kind of take the best of the two worlds. So keep a very low algorithmic complexity, but also satisfy area law in a sense that it will be clear in a second. And we have called these augmented TTN. And if you want, they are a particular instance of a MERA or an interpolation between a PEPS and a TTN in this sense. So how do we cure this problem here? Well, you can see here how we are going to do that. So we have our TTN, our Hamiltonian, and in between, we're going to insert a layer of unitary operators, this entangler, exactly as with the MERA, but with a particular property. And this property is that, if you can see here now from above, these are placed not in every link, but in such a way that none of them is directly connected with none couple of them is directly connected by one Hamiltonian term. Because if you satisfy this condition, the contraction and all the algorithms that I have introduced to you at the very beginning is exactly still valid, and it remains M to the four. Okay, so this is not a big change in the structure for an 8x8 state, but if we scale this thing up, you see already 16x16, the number of these entanglements start to grow, and 32x32 even more. And you see, even more importantly, this is for one nearest neighbor interaction. If we cut now in the middle, the number of these entanglements that we are cutting scales with the system size. L over two, not L, but it's still a good scale. So we have the, we have tested the how this is this performs, and here you can see the result for the easy model in two dimensions. So this is the energy, and you see that for an 8x8 system, the difference between the TTN and the augmented TTN is actually not really relevant. The number of this entanglement is too small, or if you want, the bond dimension is large enough to include most of, I mean, all of, to reach the precision wanted. This is machine precision. While for the 64x64 system, you can start clearly see the difference between the two approaches. So this is still improving while this is essentially saturated. And so this is fighting against an exponential. So this is our first benchmark. The second benchmark is against the two-dimensional Heisenberg model, much challenging problem. And here you see a comparison with all the results we could find in the literature of regarding tensor networks and new deep neural networks. So I've been actually, this is wrong. This is, it has been improved some months ago, so it has to be here. And this is to be compared against Monte Carlo, because of course Monte Carlo for this problem is still the way to go, right? But you can see here that we are kind of able to improve a lot our result for a 32x42 system. So we have also applied this to a more an interesting physical problem, and in particular to the simulation of Rydberg atoms in optical tweezers, following which can be described by this Hamiltonian describing the experiment performed by Misha Lukin at Harvard and by Antoine Braillet in Paris, but in particular, this is the figures that I'm showing you is by Misha. And you know what they've been showed is a nice phase crossing of a phase transition, given that the phase diagram of a one-dimensional system is this one, and they could go on up to 51 qubits. So this is one of the, as far as I know, one of the largest quantum simulations that control quantum simulation that has been done. So what we have done is to apply all our machinery to the two-dimensional version of this system, which is clearly the next step in quantum simulators. Here you can see the positioning of the disentanglers. It's different than before because here we have next neighbor interaction terms, so they are reduced, but still we have been able to go up to sizes of 32x32 sites and describing a nice phase diagram, with different phases, the checkerboard phases and Manhattan phases, and as you can see. You can also, of course, study the energy as a function of the system parameters. Here you can see the second derivative showing that these are indeed the second order phase transition. Good. So this concludes the very first part of the talk. And now I move and apply all this machinery to lattice gauge theory. Okay, so now we move in the realm of lattice gauge theory. Here you can see a nice review paper that we've written recently with a number of groups working in the field and belonging to the QTFLAG European project. So where you can find the recent results of all these groups. And what is here the goal? Of course, the goal is to go to, you know, to go where Monte Carlo and lattice calculations cannot go. Here you see a possible QCD phase diagram, and also in green you see highlighted the region where lattice QCD can perform calculations, while in all these other parts there is no Monte Carlo cannot go essentially because of a sign problem. While we know that we don't have a sign problem, so the goal is there. But of course, it's a very long way to go. So first, we have to set up the stage, and the stage is as follows. So in all of what I will say, I will consider matter field and gauge degrees of freedom. So matter field living on the vertices and the gauge fields living on the links. We have, of course, a gauge symmetry generator, a gauge symmetry. We are going to work in the Kogut-Sask in the Hamiltonian formulation of lattice gauge theory, as you have already seen this week. And these are the typical Hamiltonian terms that we want to discuss. So gauge invariant dynamics and correlated open interaction between gauge fields and matter. Okay, so on top of that, we will, we have to simplify our problem. So what we will do is to work in what is called the quantum link representation of lattice gauge theory, and moreover, we will install Riesz's representation. So we are going to take the link operator or the parallel transporter and truncate its spectrum and represent it as a spin, which will be then represented as a couple of modes living on two Hilbert spaces in this way. Okay, so that means that now if we have this represents the electric field, and so if we want to work in the spin 1/2 for quantum link representation, that means we allow only two possible states for the electric field, left and right. This is equivalent to one particle, one region open in a double well, being either on the left or on the right. If we want to increase the representation, so including also the zero electric field state, which is what we are going to do from now on, we have two particles living open in two wells, and these are all the possible states. So this can also have a very nice matrix product operator description, so the projection over the gauge invariant states with fixed number of regions. And then what you can do, you can start, and of course you can, for example, study one-dimensional QAD, the Schwinger model, in the quantum link representation. And as you can, the Hamiltonian you can see here, and we have done that, and there is here there's a phase transition, the conformal entropy scaling, and so on. You can do more, so you can do studies time evolution, and here you can see a scattering of two mesons, which are given to momenta, and this is space, this is real time, and you see that these are really scattering as you expect. And more importantly, you can study the entanglement generated of during the scattering. So this is the phonomial entropy of bipartition, of all this bipartition as a function of time. And you see that if you look at here, you have that initially there's no entanglement between the two particles as it should be. And then at some point they scatter. And after there is a long living entanglement, which is exactly the entanglement given by a single Bell pair on top of a quantum fluctuation. So that means that you have a Bell pair because you don't know if bouncing or crossing scattering has occurred. You can also perform non-abelian phase study of a non-abelian phase diagram at finer density. This is an example, but I want to quickly go to two dimensions, which is maybe here more relevant. So in two dimensions, we are going now to apply all we have seen until now together. So here you see the Hamiltonian. Now we have also, of course, the magnetic term, Laquette term. We have we are using staggered fermions, and so we have this coding for a particle and antiparticle, and we are allow three possible states of a gauge field. We work with the TTN in two dimensions, and we keep only the gauge invariant states in a local site, which is formed by a fermion and half of the links and four regions. Okay, so this is a kind of encoding. Now, the good news is that if given that the regions are fermions, you can write this Hamiltonian in terms always of couples of fermionic operators. And these are bosons. So we have no issues with Jordan-Wigner strings. So this also simplify our simulations. So here you can find a phase diagram as a function of a system parameters, so the mass and electric coupling for a system of up to 16 times 16 lattice sites. And you can see that there is a change of phase between a vacuum phase and a charged crystal phase, where it's if a mass is negative, a very large, is favorable to create particle antiparticle couples in your system. You can go at finite density. So, for example, you can insert additional charges, and here you see some cartoon states that we expect. So, if on the vacuum phase we insert one charge, we expect it to stick on the boundaries to reduce the amount of electric field that is created. And this is the result of a simulation. You see for eight charges, they indeed stick to the boundaries exactly as in a conductor. Okay, and so here we are now. So we can take all this now and apply to three-dimensional tensor network. So you see that this is 1D, 2D, and now 3D, it start to be pretty complex, but this is nothing more than, again, the coding of X, Y, and Z renormalized. You can find these results on the archive soon. It should have appeared this morning, but it says that it's on hold. I don't know, on the archive, and that for some times can be on hold. We will see what happens. So, and yet again, now we have this very same Hamiltonian as before. Now we have three Laquette terms in the three direction, the same original degrees of freedom, occupied or not for the matter field, three states for the gauge fields, and the gauge invariant states, which are enforced, which are defines our logical site. So the number of gauge invariant states in a single site defines the local dimension, and the local dimension of this object is 267 states. Okay, so it's essentially 8 qubits to encode this thing. We have up to 12,000 Hamiltonian operators. And we enforce the link constraint of the number of regional link by means of an energy penalty term. So some of this simulation has lasted more than 1 month on 64 cores. So this is kind of an effort, numerical effort. And here you can see a typical convergent pattern as a function of a bond dimension. And also we have strategies to ramp up the penalty terms to enforce the region number conservation over the link. Having said so, here you see now the phase diagram. So a phase transition. This is a second order phase transition as a function of a mass without Laquette terms here. No, yes, here it's without Laquette terms. Again, for very large masses, you have empty, while for very large negative masses, here you have dimers of particle of and antiparticle states connected by one electric field, exactly what we have found before. These are simulation up to 8 × 8 × 8 lattice size. That means a cube of 64 qubits. And you see that now if we switch on the magnetic terms, the configuration of electric field is reshuffled, sorry. And you find that the transition point is shifted from the unphysical negative masses actually to the physical negative, to a physical positive masses. We should remember that here we are not still, we are not at the level of really finding real numbers, okay? But this is already very interesting. So then we can start playing with different configuration. And so for example, looking at the screening, and you see we are in 3D, what you can study is a capacitor. It's a charge capacitor in 3D. So we are now setting our boundary conditions to be fully charged of classical charges and fully charged of negative charges. And you can think and see what's happening. And here is what we found. So this is the configuration that we would expect. So where the electric field flows from one plate to the other, exactly as a classical capacitor, but then changing the mass value, what happens is that you have a phase transition to a scenario where it's more favorable to break the electric field, and string and create particle antiparticle, exactly screening the electric field. And again, you can of course characterize this to some extent. This is one nice result. And the second is instead related to confinement. So here you see the results of simulations of a volume of 4 × 4 × 16 sites where we put inside one classical positive and negative charge and we studied the potentials, the potential that is generated by these two classical charge on top of the energy, of a ground state energy without the charges. And again, you see that now changing the coupling, the magnetic coupling, you go from a Coulomb phase where the electric field is essentially follow a complex pattern reminiscent of a classical one to a phase, a confined phase where you have a linear potential, which represents a single string of electric field connecting the two charges. Okay, I think I have a couple of minutes more, but not more than that. So I will really go through this very, very quickly. Just want to mention that all this machinery has another very nice application, which is machine learning tensor network. You have already heard about that for sure. So what we do is taking the approach introduced here, but instead of using MPS, we use our beloved three tensor networks. And we have applied all this machinery in collaboration with the LHCb experimenting at CERN to classify events at the LHC. And we have compared this with respect to the neural network approach and to the standard approach that has been used until recently. So here the fact is that you are creating in a scattering event, you are creating jets of B and B bars, and you want to distinguish between them. Jets are formed of different particles. Each particle has charge, moment, and directions, and you want to, by these quantities, to understand if B and B bar, which part quark you are detecting. Okay, so these are the results. So this was the standard approach. These are the efficiency, the tagging power is a quantification of efficiency of this identification, classification. You see that our tensor network is essentially equivalent or efficient, competitive with deep neural network. Sorry, I'm skipping this. What is more interesting is that with our hierarchical structure, it's easy now to look at the entropies of the learned wave function and identify, combining correlations and entropy arguments, what are the features more relevant for the classification. So we can define algorithms to do that. And so, for example, out of the 16 features, we could identify 8, which were as good as in, and enough to have the very same efficiency as before, reducing the time for classification. And that's very, very important to the next step of the CERN LHC, the high luminosity LHC, where velocity in quantification will be very, very important. So to conclude, my take home message is are many. Some of them is that I'm sure that tensor network algorithm will be used and will be fundamental for guiding and supporting and benchmarking the development of quantum simulator and quantum computation. That high dimensional tensor network simulations are now available, I would say. That the entanglement of mixed many body quantum states can be quantified. But I would say that now we are really touching the point where high performance computing has to play a relevant role for all our simulation if you want really to scale this technology up to produce relevant results. And with that, I thank you very much for your attention, all the collaborators and the funding. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Simone, for this grand overview over tree tensor networks and applications. Very nice. Other questions? Maybe I can start with one. So the three-dimensional case, this was only for abelian gauge theory so far?
Oh, yes. This is only for abelian. However, okay. However, in our construction, the character, the abelian or non-abelian character of the gauge theory is resolved in the definition of the logical states, of the states mm-hmm. in the logical sum. So that's, mm-hmm. I would say it's not the hard part of all the mm-hmm. of all the numerics. Of course, for non-abelian gauge theories, that construction is can be done straightforwardly, but it results in even higher local dimensions. So that will be a problem, okay? Mm-hmm. But there's nothing really theoretically complex that prevents us to go to non-abelian. In 1D, we have already done it, and it's
true, 2D we also
know how to do it. Mm-hmm. So it's more complex with the theoretical analysis that we have to do in advance, which is how to discretize the non-abelian symmetry, which is mm-hmm. common mm-hmm. on all approach.
Sure. Okay, thanks. There's a question from Manuel, please.
Hi, thanks a lot for your talk. I was wondering how the entanglement entropy of ATTN looks like, because if you have a cut in the exact middle, it looks like an area law. But what if you don't more. Cut through the disentanglers?
So that's exactly the point. We know by counting the number of links that we cut in the middle. Here, let's see if I found it very quickly. So, okay. So here, you see, this cut is cutting a number of links which scales with L. So we know that in principle, this is it scales as L over 2. Okay, but it's over 2. It's only a factor. Okay, so in principle, this satisfies RLO. Unfortunately, we cannot compute the entanglement entropy very easily as you would do with a TTN, because if we had to compute the reduced density matrix, that would be exponentially large, exactly because it can encode a lot of entanglement. So it's like for PEPs, you cannot really directly compute in the entanglement as you do with MPS or TTN, where you just take the singular values here and compute the phenomenon entropy of them. So we cannot check directly how much entanglement this thing can encodes, we can compute you know, correlation functions and all the other stuff, exactly as you do with EPS or MER.
This is Carl. Hi, Carl. Maybe I didn't get it, but for the 2+1 and 3+1 dimensional gate series, you use just 3 tensor networks, right?
Yes. Until now, this is still with only with 3 tensor networks.
And but then you don't have area loss.
I don't have area loss, indeed. But still, you know, the results converge pretty well. So we have room for improvement. But this is only really a practical issue. We were doing the two things together. So we had not enough time to do the two things together. So there is still room for improvement, even though it's technically pretty complex to set up all that. So,
but you say it's essentially straightforward to also augment in 2+1 and 3+1 dimensions.
Oh, yes. Straightforward. I mean, it's a terrible bookkeeping of Hamiltonian terms. Nothing more than that. It's, of course, technically very complex, but there's no fundamental points here. So actually, already, if you want already, this example here is, it's not, so this example here is with next nearest neighbor interaction. And diagonal ones, so it's not 2D, of course, but it's already going in that direction. There, it's much more complex because you have much more Hamiltonian terms and so on. So you have to be very, very careful. But I don't see real issues. And then the other point is that even without this. The additional layer of these entanglers, actually it converges pretty well already. Which can be related to the fact that, as we all know, the more higher dimension, the more mean field should work well. Mm-hmm. Still, we have bond dimensions of 500 or things like that, so it's not really mean field. So we have a lot of corrections.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Matteo, you want to?
Oh, well, it was just an annotation on top of the rest of what Simone was already commenting, say that even without the augmented, you already have on average the RLO. So you don't have it for all partitions, but on average, so if you pick up all the partitions which have a certain size, on average, you satisfy RLO already with the simple structure. So that comes from all stuff that we have done together. So
how many averages would you need?
Maybe it's already going in the right direction already without the augmented. So
that's exactly the reason why you don't need to put the disentangler everywhere, but only somewhere.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you could also, you know, all the results that I've shown are average over all the space, but we exactly know where the local measurement or nearest neighbor measurement are more precise, which are exactly where when you bipartite the system you cut most of the tree. So of course, if you want to measure the, you know, the interaction nearest neighbor interaction term, you don't have to measure it here for the single tree, but here in the bulk in the middle. And we have results also for that already in 1D. It's clear that you really see a pattern. And so you could even, kind of cheat and go there for at least local quantities, and you will improve your results. Of course, then if you want long-range correlations, you have to cope with these issues.
Thank you.
Okay, are there any more questions? I don't see any more right now. So then let's thank Simone again for this overview.